Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, since you're suffering in a heat wave, I figured I'd cheer you up with some Christmas music. Welcome to the program. Counter programming. I love Christmas music in July. I can't stand it in December. That's the problem. Anyway, to pick up on what I was talking about yesterday, which was survival of the fittest and how we've lost an entire generation to Spockism, liberalism, and Ritalin, that almost rhymes. Remember I was talking about nature yesterday, how it's clearly what your father told you, at least my father taught me, that it's a jungle out there and it's survival of the fittest. And I told you that Obama's working for the other side, either on purpose or by accident. But the Russians have won the space war, which we've been involved with at least 60 years. They finally won. And that's either because a fellow traveler in the White House let them win or because of his lame-brained Pinocchio policies that he learned along the way where the skids were greased. So I'm talking about survival of the fittest and how it works, whether on a microbial level or on a macro level, international level, galactic level, right? And as God is my witness, you just have to take it for what it is. I leave the studio. I drive home. I go and sit on the back of a deck, which is right on San Francisco Bay in a little house I own. I mean, I didn't even have an adult beverage. I had a bad headache. I didn't even want to drink, okay? You never drink when you have a headache. Never drink when you're depressed. Never. Did you know that? Did your father teach you that? When you're down, don't drink? No drink, nothing. I'm sitting there. What do I see? I see a pelican out in the bay, maybe 100 yards off from my house. And I see like three, four seagulls trying to, like, I thought, steal a fish out of its mouth. And every few seconds, they swoop down, the gulls, and she snaps her big beak and they fly off. Then the pelican's attacked again by three or four gulls who are swooping in like fighter planes on her. And she's just sitting in the water, and I'm saying, wow, they're trying to steal a fish right out of her mouth. This is right off the show. Where I'm telling you, it's like America's having the fish stolen out of its mouth. I get off the air, and there it's going on, and nature's talking to me again because I have a relationship with nature. But I misread nature. It wasn't that the pelican was fishing, and they were trying to steal a fish out of her mouth. It was far more diabolical. She was a sick pelican, and they were trying to kill her in order to eat her while she was alive. So listen to this. The poor old pelican starts to slowly paddle towards me while fending off the pelican, gulls trying to kill her. And I swear to God, she comes right up to next to my house. She seeks shelter as though she knows I'm going to be her shepherd. And I'm fending off the gulls with a rake, and I'm trying to get them away. Normally, I feed them old bread and old bagels, and they won't go away, but they got scared. And finally, she stays there, and she looks up at me. And I look in her eye, and I start talking to her like she's my dog, and I'm calling her Teddy, figuring I could communicate with animals, and she doesn't go away. I throw a little bread to her. She won't eat it because I don't think they eat bread, or she was so sick she couldn't eat it all. Meanwhile, I got a good look at her, and either she was a juvenile or whatever, and I'm telling you the truth, within a few 20 minutes later, she started to paddle out again, and again they attacked her. I don't know whether they got her or she went to pelican heaven. So what's the point of the story? Point of the story is everything and nothing. The point of the story is that if you raise your children to be too soft, and if you put them on medication because they feel uncomfortable, they're going to wind up not only having the fish taken out of their beak, they're going to wind up having their beak taken out of the pelican. And so on that note, we'll go on to the stories of the day. Bomb maker at Islamic school dies in demonstration. Bomb maker at Islamic school dies in demonstration. Notice it wasn't at a Christian seminary. Bomb maker at Islamic school dies in demonstration. Bring in more of them. Go ahead, bring in more from the Middle East. Congress agrees Obama botched Libya action. No kidding. Obama kills space program, ends America's dominance, kills 10,000 jobs. Why am I the only one in the media repeating over and over and over and over again that Obama not only killed the space program, but he killed 10,000 jobs at a time like this, and not one person in the media that I know of is talking about it? The answer is simple. The government media complex. Way back in 1998, a brilliant man in radio, long before Glenn Beck was sober, when I think he was still fighting the booze, and he was spinning records, there was a man in radio by the name of Michael Savage who said, beware the government media complex. No blackboard, no chalk, no fake glasses. And the speech was amazing. It was delivered at the Commonwealth Club. If you were there, please give me a ring. It was a seminal speech during the Clinton administration where I said, beware the government media complex. And this was, I think, while Rush was still having his problems. This is while the loofah man on Fox News was still using loofahs with the producers or whatever till they bought it off, till the Murdoch group bought off the problem. And I was warning you about the government media complex. Does it get any worse than Alan Greenspan and his old lady, that woman whose name I can't even mention? She, of all the people, drives me crazier than all of them. I don't even remember her name. Andrea Mitchell and Alan Greenspan, government media complex. Last week, I turned on MSNBC. There is a morning host by the name of Brzezinski interviewing her communist father, who was the former secretary, a national security advisor under Jimmy Peanut Carter, Father Brzezinski, saying we should tax the middle class and the rich, or else we're going to have a social revolution. Government media complex. Do you know any other examples of husbands and wives or fathers and daughters or any such close relationships in the media that America should know about? Don't call me. Call 911. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I see we're dead in the water already. Can tell you right now, there's no calls. I don't know where everyone is. Summertime. No one cares about real. Casey Anthony, take me out to the ball game. That's all you want to hear. Another schmuck almost fell out of the stands and died. I mean, God rest the guy's soul who fell. He shouldn't have died. Here's another moron, a putz, a grown man, with a pair of shorts that I'm showing us from the butt side nowhere, jumping up on the stand to catch a ball, a grown man. The last time I caught a ball at a ball game, yes, I did. In 1952, I was 10 years old, Yankee Stadium. I still have the ball. It might be worth $12. A hard ball. Now I'm going to get a schmucker call. No, Mike, it's worth $300. A hard ball from Yankee Stadium. I caught it when it bounced in 1952. I was 10. A grown man jumps up and almost kills himself. Almost falls off a stand for a ball. That's America. That's why you have Obama. Pelicans, gulls, fish in their mouth. Kiss America goodbye. Melody in Houston, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage.
Hello. How are you? What's on your mind?
I work for the space program. I work on the International Space Station program, and I think it's absolutely disgusting what Obama has done.
It's treasonous. It's not disgusting. He committed treason. I'm blocked from doing it. And the only way Obama got away with it is playing that card that he's used from the time he was born.
Well, there's no reason for it. Those shuttles were certified to fly 100 flights each, and they only flew an average of 35.
Well, let's forget about how many. Look, let's forget that issue. That's an important point, and thank you for it. The point is that the Soviet Union, which has been vying for dominance in space with us since 1959, well, that's when they launched Sputnik. It was before then. Has finally won the race because we've stopped fighting it. So doesn't it logically follow that whoever controls space is going to control weapons from space, and whoever controls weapons from space can end the war without firing a ray beam?
I believe you're right.
Well, see, it's not just about the space station and exploring asteroids, as Obama would say, and it's not just about the collateral inventions that result from this basic research, which are all very important, which we have delineated on the show last week. It's also about maintaining supremacy technologically so that we don't fall behind in the arms race, because once we do, we are going to be like that pelican having the lunch taken out of our beak. If not worse, we'll have the beak taken out of our body by the Russians and or the Chinese.
I think it's a travesty. It's just absolutely...
No, again, the wrong word. It's treason. He committed treason. and either he's working for the other side, or he did this because he believes in disarmament. There's no other reason for this. How did he do it without? How did he do this without a congressional investigation?
I don't know.
Does anyone have an answer to that? How did Obama end NASA flights to the space station without any discussion with the American people, let alone Congress? How did he do this?
Right, and how did he change our mission from that of exploring space?
And how did he put Mr. Doofus in charge of NASA? Does anyone know why that man is running NASA? Have you seen this man speak?
Oh, yes.
Well, where did he come from? Why is he there? I know he's an ex-astronaut. That does not mean he's a good general, does it?
No.
No. He may be a fine astronaut and a dummy as a leader with no vision. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'll be right back. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Liftoff, the final liftoff of Atlantis. On the shoulders of the space shuttle, America will continue the dream.
Roger, roll, Atlantis.
Houston now controlling the flight of Atlantis. The space shuttle spreads its wings one final time for the start of a sentimental journey into history. 24 seconds into the flight, roll program complete. Atlantis now heads down, wings level, on the proper alignment for its 8.5-minute ride to orbit. 4.5 million pounds of hardware and humans taking aim on the International Space Station. 40 seconds into the flight, the three liquid fuel main engines throttling back to 72% of rated performance in the bucket, reducing stress on the shuttle as it goes transonic for the final time.
There goes America. From Sputnik to Sput Out in one generation, because we put this stealth individual into the White House, and we don't know whether he's playing for the other side or whether he did this because of his left-wing fanaticism, where they said that such exploration is a waste of time and money. In either case, Russia has won the space race, and I've watched it my lifetime with pride in this country like you cannot believe. Just hearing that American voice reporting from Houston, once again I felt pride swelling in my chest. But it's over. It's over. We have lost our edge. This man put a knife in the heart of space exploration. The astonishing part of this story, which is yet to be written, is how did he get away with it? I don't hear any discussion of it. Last October when I wrote, well, actually, when it was published, Trickle Up Poverty, I'd written it 6 months before. I was warning America. I was trying to warn America. I saw what he was doing to the defense budget with the Quisling Robert Gates. Do you know that I wrote the book, it was a bestseller, and yet not one congressman, so far as I know, raised an objection to slashing the heart out of NASA? I don't know who did this. How did this happen? Is there a gigantic conspiracy? Are they all asleep? Have they been misled so sufficiently by this slick group running the country that they don't even know what has happened here? Am I the last man standing? Shall I put the lights out on America? Now you say you're being alarmist. Nothing has really changed. Well, okay, you could put it that way. The sky is still blue. It's still hot in the summer. It's still cold in the winter. It snows in the winter. I understand all of that. The sky was blue. It was technicolor outside Auschwitz and Dachau also. While people were dying inside the gas chambers, right outside the barbed wire, they were eating strudel a mile away, and they were enjoying the strudel, and they didn't even know what was going on, so they said. Yeah, there's always a sky out there. Things don't really change for everybody. But I am telling you what Obama has done, and it's still not irrevocable, has destroyed us militarily, has taken away our edge with regard to space, space weaponry, because let me level with you. I'm more concerned with space weaponry than meeting little green men on Mars. I'm not so concerned about exploring space for the sake of the scientists and for them to have a little fun with an erector set in Houston or a chemistry set, whatever they were using, whichever department they were in, physics, life sciences, God bless them all. No, I'm concerned about the advances in space craft, the advances in space exploration to keep our edge in space weaponry. I don't want to wake up and hear the Chinese got that first, or the Russians have it first. They have a ray beam that can hit the Earth anywhere on Earth and melt a nation or melt a city or melt a town. I don't want to hear that. What are you going to do then? Well, tell me what you're going to do then. You were out there catching a ball at a baseball game? How did this happen? How did Obama get away with it? That's all I want to know. Is there anyone listening to this show who heard a debate about ending the missions to the space station? I didn't hear it. I did not hear it. Now, there's also another issue, which is the gun running to Mexico. Major issue. Holder and Obama were behind it, according to the man at the ATF, who they tried to throw under the bus, and he said, I'm not going. He's now testifying that he was told to ship those guns from the U.S. to Mexican cartels. Testimony last week before Congress, head of a Mexican cartel, very dangerous man, one of the most dangerous men on the planet, captured. What did he say? He said half the guns, or many of the guns we used, came directly from sales by the U.S. government. So you ask yourself, oh, wait a minute. Is this guy crazy? Is Savage making this up? Well, look it up. Fast and Furious is the name of the program. See what comes up. A border patrol, an ICE agent, was shot and killed with one of the guns that we sold to Mexican cartels. His family is thinking of suing the Justice Department, but the libs won't pick up on that. Anything Obama does is good. Everything Obama does is great. It doesn't matter how many people die, because if you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. In this case, the egg was that border patrol agent. In the other case, it was our advancement in space. In the other case, it's the death of our society in terms of social programs. What do I mean by social programs? What happened to family values as an issue? Where have the Republicans gone on the great issue of family values, marriage between a man and a woman? Where have the Republicans gone on the warfare against the family? The warfare against children, the brainwashing. Where are the Republicans on such fundamental issues? I don't see those social issues, except for one person, Michelle Bachmann, and she will not come on this program. And we're going to have more about Michelle Bachmann and what I think of her, since you saved her bacon when she was down and out a year and a half ago. She begged you for money and you sent it, and now she's saying to the Savage Nation, drop dead.
Savage.
This is Michael Savage, a multimedia icon in the conservative movement. I want to read you a page from Trickle Up Poverty, page 274, last year, bestseller, Obama the Space Cadet, Houston, we have a problem. I'm going to read it to you a little later on, but I want you to understand something. With the stroke of a pen, he announced his plans to scrap NASA's current space exploration program, and it was done April 15, 2010. He goes to the Mecca of space travel and announces with a placid smile on his face that he's about to tear the program apart. And I ask this question, why would Obama destroy NASA? Don't we already have the best aeronautical program in the world? I wrote, we do. Do I need to point out that it's one of the few government programs with direct benefits to the taxpayer? Thanks to NASA's research and development, we now have a list of inventions that enhance and protect our lives. Among them is the TV satellite dish, fail-safe flashlights with system redundancy, shock-absorbing helmets for sports and biking enthusiasts, edible toothpaste, space pens that can be used to write upside down, cordless tools originally developed to help Apollo astronauts drill for moon samples, smoke detectors first used in the Skylab space station, ear thermometers that don't use mercury, and joystick controllers created for the Apollo lunar rover. These are some of the inventions. So I wrote, why does Obama the space cadet want to fix what isn't broken? Well, that's the question of the day. The question has no answer for it. Something is wrong with this entire picture. And I'd like to know how one man can sabotage what took 60 years to create. Okay? Florida, Ben, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mark. How are you? Just had a quick comment regarding the space program here. I live in Cocoa Beach, Florida, and just wanted to point out that, you know, the shuttle was a 40-year-old technology that needed to be replaced. We are hopeful that commercial ventures are starting. We've got a commercial for actually 13 scheduled launches. Only two of those were shuttle launches this year. So we're optimistic about
that. When you're saying we, who's the imperial we that you are referring to?
We, the residents of Brevard County. We are
10,000. Well, first of all, that's a big if. You're hoping. What are you basing your hope upon?
That the private sector will be able to run it more efficiently and produce.
Really? How come that Obama hasn't turned the post office over to the private sector? Why did he choose NASA?
Well, they probably should. The post office is probably not going to make it work.
So, in other words, if you want to privatize a governmental agency, why begin with something related to our national security instead of the postal service?
I would prefer to privatize the space industry, yes. That's my opinion.
You would prefer. So you think that a private enterprise would have gotten us to the moon faster than the government did?
In the current state where we are, the way things are not working in Washington, I think the private sector would do a better job.
Well, how about privatizing the U.S. military? It's a very inefficient organization. By your logic, we should privatize the entire military. Ben, I know we've had our problems, Ben. Can't we work this out? Ben, where did you go, Ben? Ben, all I said was, why can't we privatize the military, Ben? I realize you're calling from the government itself, Ben, to try to brainwash the people. Ben, please don't do that.
Ben, we've can work it out, Ben. Daisy.
See, it really should have come from the other side. Now, there was a planted call from the government listening to the Savage Nation. They have agents all over the country who act like Ben from Florida or Hal from Brooklyn or Schmendrick from Texas, all different accents, all on the government payroll. And they call radio shows with the government propaganda. Couldn't answer the question because it wasn't on his sheet. I used his logic, and he got tripped up by his own logic. He said that the government could do it better. I mean, individual private enterprise could do it better than the government. So I said, why not privatize the post office? He said, they should. So I said, why didn't he start with the post office instead of something related to national security? No answer. And then I challenged him. I said, why don't we just privatize the U.S. military? Blank. New York. Todd, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, thanks for taking my call. Just to get back to what you said at the beginning of the program, thanks to the Christmas music. It's hot in New York now, but a wise man once said that the coldest winter I ever experienced was the summer in San Francisco. And I know
and who was the wise man?
He was a gray-haired man, wrote a lot of good books, and off the top of my head, it escapes me right now.
His name was Mark Twain.
Thank you very much, Michael. I really wanted to get to the space weaponization in NASA because I thought you touched on a very good, important point. Now, the gentleman before did bring up a good point, though, Michael, that privatization in some areas, as you mentioned, would be more beneficial. I mean, look, NASA, we got to spend $4,000 for a hammer. I mean,
Hold on now. You see, what's going to happen now in this discussion is you're going to use standard hokey Republican conservative arguments that half of them are based upon greed and fraudulent accounting to say that privatization is the answer. That's not the answer to every problem. Let's start with what we can't privatize. Could you privatize the military?
No.
Well, okay. Oh, let's agree then. Why can you not privatize the U.S. Navy, for example?
Am I going to leave that to Halliburton? I mean, that's
why not? Maybe even with our Congress, you might even have the Chinese building our ships for us. And why not go to the next step? Get rid of the U.S. Navy personnel and let China put the men on the ships because they work for less.
Michael, that's true.
All right. So we agree that you cannot privatize every division of the government. Is that correct?
I agree with you.
All right. So at least we agree you can't privatize all governmental agencies. It wouldn't work for a number of reasons, not the least of which is national security concerns. So therefore, why should you think that privatizing space weaponry and the research of such is something we should leave in the hands of corporations which have no loyalty to this country?
Well, I believe that deep space exploration should be for the government. However, low Earth orbit should be for privatization. I see no problem with that. But keep in mind, Mike.
Wait, you're making such grand statements. They have to be discussed because they're very serious. Low altitude space weapons, up to what altitude? You're talking atmospheric?
Well, well, the same amount of just as high as basically the space not the space shuttle, but where
up to the space station. You're saying from here to the space station, you're alleging that private enterprise could do a better job of developing space weapons. How are you going to control these corporations with regard to sharing of information with our enemies or our potential enemies or our adversaries or our own competitors? How are you going to prevent that if it's a corporation?
Michael, you're misunderstanding me. I would not allow corporations or the private enterprise to weaponize those industries. But keep in mind right now, we already have weapons right now that can turn Saudi Arabia's desert into glass. Who's going to use them, Michael? Republicans?
Well, we won't use them because we have men who won't even use the weapons we have in a war with Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. They're making our men take a bullet and lose their legs and arms rather than kill the enemy first. So I agree with you, but it's not about the fact that we lack weapons. It's that we lack men with vision and brains and courage. That's the problem. We have quislings who are shaking at the top, breaking down in pink ties over medals that were given to them, cockamamie medals by Obama. So it's not about weapons, it's about the leadership. But let's go beyond that. I don't understand your thinking. How in the heck are you going to develop space weapons from a private corporation?
Well, again, Michael, I would not allow the private sector to weaponize space. I'm just saying use it as like a tourist industry. I have no problem with that. It's deep space exploration where I think...
Well, now, wait. We're losing the whole discussion here. Has Russia stopped flying shuttles to the space station? The answer is no.
Right.
How is it that Russia, which was so recently a basket case economically, saw it in their national security interest to put more of their money in maintaining a shuttle service to the space station than we? Why did they decide to do that?
Well, the Russians are obviously looking out for their own economic interests. You know, they realize that, now they bought into capitalism. They're going to charge us $43, $53, $63 million per astronaut to send.
Well, for one, the Russians gave one price for to be a passenger on their shuttle. They've already raised it twice, but that's to be expected. But that's not the point. Why is it that Russia continues to fly space shuttles to the space station, and we have to now become passengers on this space shuttle? Why do you think they did not, since they were just a basket case 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, why is it that they deemed it in their national interest to continue flying to the space station?
I would say only for the fact, Michael, that their technology, which is, it's 30, 40 years old, just as our current space shuttle program is 30, 40 years old in technology. And it does not make sense to drive around today in a car that was built in 1975, not economically or safety-wise, and you could get there a lot cheaper with more technology.
Wait a minute, but Russia, according to you, they're flying 1975 rockets, old technology. So we're now what? We're back to the buggy whip and a horse? Because we don't even have a rocket to take us to the space station. I would say if I had a choice between a 78 Buick Riviera and a buggy, I would take the 78 Buick Riviera, wouldn't you?
That's true. The Riviera drove like you're riding on a cloud.
Well, I mean, you're making a point, but, you know, my mind sometimes is quite logical. You have to forgive me in an age of medication and people's inability to hold an argument. So the fact of the matter is we're better off with old technology than no technology. We have nothing right now. But the big issue is, what is Russia going to do when she has our astronauts, well, shall I say, while he has our astronauts as passengers on their rocket taking them to the space station? You think Russia's going to not eavesdrop on our astronauts with regard to their mission and what we might be doing up there at the space station?
I would say, Michael, it's probably already happening on the space station. I'm sure that there is probably bugs that the Japanese have planted, that the Russians have planted, and others that we have allowed up there, that we carried up there. I'm sure they've already planted things. I'm sure you would probably agree with that, wouldn't you?
Well, I don't know. I've never been there. I mean, I don't think I'll ever be in space. I myself don't even like traveling to Florida myself. But the fact of the matter is I've done a lot of traveling in my life, and I've done enough for a lifetime. I'm very happy with terra firma. And the question is, why would Russia continue to fly rockets, admittedly with old technology, to the space station. And at the same time, the dragon is rising in China. Is China cutting its nuclear arsenal? Did China agree to cut back on its launchers? Did China agree to stop developing ballistic submarines? Did China agree not to expand its navy? Absolutely not. So how is Obama getting away with cutting back not only on our shuttle, but do you know that our navy and the number of ships we have is now at the lowest level, or shortly will be since World War One? Are you aware of that?
Well, actually, Michael, I am aware of that, and I would attribute all of those things that you mentioned, and I agree with the government media complex. You turn on Fox News, you turn on MSNBC, ABC, CBS, it's all about, as you mentioned, Casey Anthony and this bloody debt deal.
The debt deal is a house of cards. It's a lie. The fact of the matter is, according to an expert I've just spoken with, this bullcrap put out by Geithner is a lie. He said we'll have enough in the bank and coming in revenues to pay all Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, defense contractors, veterans, and active service military with about $7 billion left over. Obama and Geithner are lying. There will be no catastrophe. Thank you for the call. So, the fact of the matter is Obama, the space cadet, is pointedly conducting a war on the military and on our national security. And thanks to Obama, Russia now holds all the cards in terms of space exploration. What's more, in the best case scenario, the soonest a privately built space shuttle can be ready is 2014. Now, what will Russia be doing between 2011 and 2014? You think they're going to sit on their hands? They have some brilliant scientists in Russia. In an attempt to quell criticism of this move, Obama said a year ago, page 276 of Trickle Up Poverty, a book that should be read like the Bible, here's what he said: nobody is more committed to manned space flight, to human exploration of space than me. But we have to do it in a smart way. We can't just keep doing the same old things that we've been doing and thinking that somehow that's going to get us to where we want to go. The same old things? Now look, we all know NASA has made their share of mistakes. But that wasn't reason enough to scrub their mission. Even a reporter for the Stalinist New York Times was left scratching his head about Obama's decision. And here's what he wrote. In place of the moon mission, Mr. Obama's vision offers at least initially nothing in terms of human exploration of the solar system. What the administration calls a bold new initiative does not spell out a next destination or timetable for getting there. It's again page 277 of Trickle Up Poverty. Meanwhile, astronauts Neil Armstrong, the first man on the moon, and Eugene Cernan, the last to set foot on its rocky soil, made a prediction about the impact of Obama's plan. Here's what they said. The USA is far too likely to be on a long downhill slide to mediocrity. America must decide if it wishes to remain a leader in space. I couldn't agree more. Obama doesn't want us to go to the moon. He wants America to be damned. And here's how I concluded the chapter. Remember Reverend Wright's sermon? Not God bless America. Wright roared into the young community activists' ears. Wright said, by the way, Obama clearly concurs with something his Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton has said. God bless the America we are trying to create. Chilling words indeed. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, look, I can only do so much of this because it's a hot night. Many people don't really care about NASA. It means nothing to them. They don't care about national security. It's not real to them. A guy's come home without legs and arms, and they see him on TV. They figure, wow, look at that guy. He's a hero. Don't even know why, where it's happened, why we're at war. Understand, because there's no draft, then it doesn't affect the average person. And if we were really at war, it would be affecting us, and we'd be talking about it. But it's not even a real war. It's like a war from another dimension. Afghanistan? What? What are we doing there? No one knows. The soldiers don't know what we're doing there. I've asked men who come back. They know their mission is to protect their fellow troops. They know their mission is to be loyal to America, but they don't even know what they're doing there. Most of them don't know why we're there. Why are we in Afghanistan? I thought Obama was going to end the war in Afghanistan. He added 30,000 troops. Nothing makes sense anymore. People don't know whether they're coming or going with regard to their nation. They don't even understand that they have a nation. Borders? Are you kidding me? You got a government taking the side of Mexicans who kill our own border patrol. You got people who want to protect the border who become the enemies of the government. Language? English only? You must be joking. Savage, are you kidding?
You want the ballots only in English? No, we need it in 16 languages in New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, so the illegal aliens can vote. They're equal to you. In fact, they're more equal than you. They're more equal than you. They have more of a right to vote. They should get two votes, and you should get one, because you're only four-fifths a human if you're a Native American. And by that, I mean born in America. I have no reference to a particular ethnic group. In fact, I would think that eventually Eric Holder can, by decree, decide that anyone born in America, because they've had so many advantages over the illegals, should only get a half a vote. And then any illegal should get two votes to make up for crimes against them over the centuries. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What else do you want to talk about? You want me to talk about a boring topic? The budget thing? I mean, they're fighting over reality for sure, but this crisis of the sky is falling is a lie by Geithner. Geithner was running the Federal Reserve, if you remember, bank in New York, the largest one of all, while the housing bubble was being punctured. He did nothing about it. He should be in prison for it, for letting it go on, in the eyes of anyone who studied this. He was sitting there. And by the way, there's so many people who let it happen, they're still in power. They never went to prison. Low-ranking guys in Wall Street were so-called caught in the web. So now he's telling us the sky is falling unless we give Obama carte blanche and another checkbook. The man ran through every checkbook that he was given. Now he wants another checkbook printed for him. And the people are saying no. So you have to understand that there was an election. In that election, they lost 70-some-odd votes. 70-some-odd votes. Remember what happened. You see, the media doesn't want you to remember. We had an election after Obama was elected. And it said to Obama, America said, we don't like you. We don't like your left-wing policies. We're putting in conservatives. And we did. America did. You forgot that? Of course you forgot it. Take me out to the ball game. Show me Casey Anthony's corpse. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care until I never get back. Take me out to the ball game. You forgot already there was another election after the communist was put in power and the people said in the yet, no, we're not going to elect you again. You forgot about that?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listening to NSR, National Savage Radio.
We've got to live within our means, but we also have to invest in the things that are going to make the economy grow.
I think Steeler Nation wants to know, don't you have the power to give Dan Rooney maybe a little bit of a break and come settle the NFL lockout?
You know, when I was in Ireland, I had a chance to have dinner with Dan, who is one of my favorite people, and we talked about the lockout a little bit.
Now he gets into his favorite topic, which is sports. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Blah, 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 blah. There we go. That's the story. So I've talked about the death of NASA under Obama, how we've gone from a leader in space exploration and space technology to a passenger on the Russian shuttle. I've talked about the fact that Obama has downsized the U.S. Navy so that we will shortly or currently have the smallest number of ships since World War I. And again, it's like falling on deaf ears. Why? Government media complex. Beware the government media complex. We're also going to talk about this because you're not going to believe it. We just had a defense secretary who left in a tear-imbued ceremony where President Obama gave him the Medal of Freedom for dismantling the military so valiantly during his tenure for Bush and for Obama. He managed to dismantle the U.S. military to an extent that nobody would have believed able to do so. So he left Robert Gates in a tear-filled ceremony. But we're left with Admiral Mike Mullen. You know Mike Mullen? Admiral Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, looks good in a suit, has a great voice. So far as we know, no combat experience. Not a Navy SEAL? No. But he's Admiral Mike Mullen, and he's in China now. Again, now you're going to listen to this, and your hair is going to, you're going to scratch your head. You're not going to believe it. Here is our chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, a military man in China. Listen to these clips.
There can be no doubt that this vibrant region is on the rise, and China's growing presence and influences plays an important role, indeed a vital role, in Asia. But in the spirit of mutual benefit, it is important to emphasize that China's rise does not imply America's decline. Another trend we are seeing is that China and other nations are rapidly expanding their military modernization efforts. Historically, as nations develop, they often invest in their armed forces, and this region is no exception. With greater military power must come greater responsibility, greater cooperation, and just as important, greater transparency. Without these things, the expansion of military power in your region, rather than making it more secure and stable, could have the opposite effect.
That's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in China telling them they're doing a great job in modernizing their military and that he's so proud of them. Now, on the face of it, you say, well, who cares? We still have so many bombs and missiles that we really don't need to worry. Well, not necessarily so. The fact of the matter is that is not exactly what the truth is. It's very complicated. In the background, while we're jettisoning our jets, missiles, subs, and nukes, the dragon is rising. Did Obama lose any of this information somewhere along the way on the way to the White House? Is China cutting its nuclear arsenal? Did China agree to cut back on its launchers? Did China agree to stop developing ballistic submarines? Did China agree not to expand its navy? No. So how is Obama getting away with this? Answer, the government media complex. And so we must remind Congress of things that must be obvious, such as one nuclear bomb can ruin your whole day. 1-800-449-8255. We've touched on Obama's war on the military and on national security from my book, Trickle Up Poverty. And I'm not trying to sell you a book. The book did very well. It's not going to change my lifestyle if you bought it or you didn't buy it. It's the best document yet about the decimation of our military that I know of in a popular book. Let's go on to the callers here on the Savage Nation. Sacramento Dan, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Michael. Pleasure to talk to you. I've watched this for many years, just like you, and it makes me sick to see, just like Jimmy Carter giving away the canal. It's the dismantling of America.
So it's the same left-wing thought that if America is less, let us say, functional militarily, there's less of a chance of war. Is that what their thinking is?
I'm not sure what they're thinking. Let's
assume that Carter, Clinton, and Obama and the other left-wing Democrats are not traitors. They're just peaceniks. And their view of peace is such that if America's capacities militarily are reduced, there's less of a chance of either an accidental or purposeful war. Would that be a fair analysis of how they might think?
Well, yes, it would. But I think the Manchurian candidate runs a lot deeper than that.
Well, many of us have these fears. Of course, they're so stealthy and they're so intelligent, we have no way to know this. And particularly since we've lost an investigative press, there's almost no way to ever find out. But remember, Jimmy Carter did the Panama Canal. Bill Clinton gave away another portion to Costco. Remember that? They now encircled us in the Panama Canal, of course. That's certainly true. And now we have this situation of ending shuttle flights to the space station, giving Russia... The Wall Street Journal said it last week. Russia wins space race. It's not just one man crying in the wilderness anymore. A whole newspaper saw it for what it is. Now you got the war here in America, the war on drugs, which many people are saying we lost. So instead of saying increase the war on drugs, instead of saying put the military on the border with Mexico, instead of saying cut back on those highways that Bush built, the highways from Mexico with no inspections of trucks, what they're saying is do the opposite. You've lost the war. Good. Now legalize the drugs altogether. Is that what they're saying? No, they're not saying that. They're saying you lost the war on drugs and don't legalize in order to make certain that the power structure maintains itself the way it is. According to millions of people, they're screaming about this. I personally do not believe in legalizing drugs such as this. I believe you can decriminalize drugs without legalizing them. It's two different things. It's a huge difference between legalizing and decriminalizing, and it's not a subtlety that's lost on children, incidentally. So now you have the gun issue. You have the issue of the guns. So I think I've covered the waterfront here on the military and all of this. But what I want to play for you, a short piece, is something that was so important that it came and went called Beware the Government Media Complex. It's a speech I gave in 1998 at the Commonwealth Club. And you know what's interesting about this speech? Not only how prescient it was and how so far ahead of its time it was, but that C-SPAN, the outlet for the Democrats and the soft Republicans, the pinko Republicans and the Democrats, refused to cover this speech when they normally cover speeches at the Commonwealth Club. Every Commonwealth Club speech that I know of was recorded by C-SPAN and broadcast by them, except for me. But I'm used to this. I'm the outsider, the eternal outsider. I'll play it when I come back right here on the Savage Nation. Well, we have a really, really, really big treat for you right now on the Savage Nation. Back in 1998, when Michelle Bachmann was still plucking chickens and Sarah Palin was killing moose and Glenn Beck was allegedly having a little struggle with the bottle, there was a man on radio who was way ahead of the pack named Michael Savage. And in 1998, he gave a speech, Beware the Government Media Complex. Listen to it.
Beware the Government Media Complex. I hope to prove to you over the next period of time that perhaps never before in American history has there been so cozy a relationship. And this, by the way, transcends right or left, has nothing to do with race, has nothing to do with politics. It has everything to do with press freedom. And I want to state that from the outset. I believe that today we have a relationship that is too cozy between government and media. Many of the speeches that are given before the Commonwealth Club, many of them, are picked up and rebroadcast by the local NPR radio station. Do you see any NPR people here? No. Many of the speeches given before the Commonwealth Club are transmitted on C-SPAN, which is paid for by the cable companies. Do you see any C-SPAN cameras here? Beware the government media complex. You know, the media, ladies and gentlemen, as you well know, is needed by you and by me, by the public, very badly needed, to be and to remain a thorn in the side of the government. In order to keep the government relatively honest, you need a media that's constantly poking at them. However, when the media instead becomes a thorn in the side of the skeptical private citizen, the media then becomes an arm of the government. Beware the government media complex. When agitators for the homeless riot, when they burn trash cans, they break the law, but they're held up as freedom fighters for the poor by the left-leaning press. But if one compassionate conservative dares to speak out, he's condemned to the gulag of media silence, the gulag of media exile. This startling bias in the media is more threatening to the pillars of our republic than even the most ardent conservative might believe. It is censorship by default as well. What do I mean by censorship by default? Where the commercial interests of the media moguls are so intertwined with government policy as to create an overly friendly image of government officials and their policies. So it may not be as clear as a conspiracy to bias the news, but it comes out to be the same thing anyway. Now, this bias is not limited to the left. It is largely a product of left-wing bias when it comes to certain social issues, such as affirmative action or gay rights. But the right also biases the news when it wants to shade fiscal issues to their benefit. I first began this file on the government media complex about 3 years ago. I noticed an alarming bias occurring, and I knew that without correction, this could sink the ship of truth. Now, surely other administrations have had their friends in high media places, but still, there were many voices and many views of dissent which found their way into the national media. But now we have a growing media blackout of some serious crimes and misdemeanors, all unsolved to the satisfaction of those with critical powers of reason. We know about these events because the dam of silence has cracked. But owned media hacks and hackettes apply their journalistic bondo with the excitement of fruit flies dancing on a rotting tomato. And who has paid for their crimes and misdemeanors? And who is being blackmailed?
Savage. Pretty good, Mike. Pretty good, Mike. I can see why you've thrived in talk radio since 1994. It was very well done. I would actually like to get a transcript of that for my website, michaelsavage.com. In fact, Babel, please send the sound bite to Art and have him post it, because I think a lot of people are going to want to play it for themselves. It's really good stuff, and we're living in that realm right now. Where are the checks and balances on Obama? You say, well, he's got loads of critics. Well, they're putative critics. They're mild critics. They're centrist critics. And they're show critics. Show critics is what they are. The real fundamental criticism is only seen on the fringes of the right-wing media. You never, ever really hear about the gun-running scandal, for example, that threatens to bring down Obama. You don't hear about the decimation of our military and of NASA. That threatens to bring down the United States of America as a military power. And there are many other issues that never make it to the consciousness of the average person who was stuck on the old-style newspaper or the old-style broadcast media. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Shortly, we're going to have Laura Ingraham on the show with her new book, and we're going to see what she's got to say of the I-Zing. America's cultural decline from muffin tops to body shots. And Laura and I have good chemistry together on the show. No doubt it'll be a lot of fun. And it'll be a change of pace for us here on the program, because we can get very heavy and very serious. And that's good. And I know many of you tune in for the serious. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Murdoch begins pushback, says Drudge. The Sun newspaper, owned by Rupert, in England is saying Brown wrong, PM Brown wrong. Now, I despise Prime Minister Brown. I believe he's one of the most cynically evil people of the century. Brown was the person, the Prime Minister, who personally put me on the list of those unable to enter Britain. He was one of the people who wanted the list to be balanced with a conservative white man in order to make the Muslim terrorists feel less picked on. So when Brown said that he was shocked, just shocked, that criminals were used by Murdoch to spy on his child or son's medical records, he was a liar. According to Brown, Murdoch used criminals, known criminals, to hack into his cell phone and the cell phone records of his assistants. Murdoch is now fighting back, saying, we didn't probe son's medical records. Brown gave us consent to run story. Source was that of cystic fibrosis child. My only wish is that the Sun in England and one newspaper in America would pick up on the fact that this corrupt, cynical leader, Gordon Brown, was the man who personally crucified Michael Savage and banned him from entering the great nation of the United Kingdom, the once great United Kingdom. How they went from Winston Churchill and Gordon Brown in one generation is astounding to me. But then again, look how we've gone from patent to patent leather in one generation, as I said. This is the Savage Nation. There are many other stories we can talk about. Let's take a quick call before the first break of this half hour. New York City, Linda, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Well, Michael, it's a pleasure to speak with you, and I have an opinion of why there is some stonewalling in the media on following any of what I call corrupt administration practices, and on the dismantling NASA and the shuttle program. I think it's just a systematic plan by Obama to dismantle America. If you look at the Gulf Act.
So you're one of those on the far right who thinks that he's actually working against the interests of our national security. Is that correct?
I absolutely do. Because when you.
All right, so tell me in 10 seconds or less why you believe he's an anti-American.
Because as a president of the United States, would you shut down drilling in an economy that is struggling and suffering, putting 25,000 people in the Gulf out of work? Would you give $10 billion or $1 billion to Brazil to develop offshore drilling?
Okay, so there's an entire litany of evidence to support your theory. the Savage Nation. Welcome back to the program. Now that we've gotten rid of the torture of the day, the heavy-duty stuff, the heavy lifting, we're going to have a little levity right now. My good friend Laura Ingraham is with us with her new book of The I Zing. And instead of me telling you about the book, let's hear from the author herself. Laura Ingraham, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. How are you? It's good to talk to you, man.
What do you mean, of The I Zing? What is that about?
Well, you know the song America. People know it as My Country, Tis of Thee, Sweet Land of Liberty, of Thee I Sing, right? And that's a tribute to the greatness of America. But, Michael, one day when I, this must have been 6 months ago or so, I did something I rarely do. I went to a shopping mall in Northern Virginia, and I'm coming down the escalator, and it just overwhelmed me. My senses were overwhelmed by what was happening in the culture. You've been writing about the culture for years. Now I have the perspective as a new mother, right? I have
yeah.
three kids under the age of six. So on to the
oh
left.
Oh my God!
Yeah, I'm an insane person. On the left, I see four girls, 13, 14, 15, and all a little larger girth, and certainly not thin. But they've shoehorned themselves into these size zero jeans, which, of course, is the muffin top in the subtitle. On the other side of me is a man getting his eyebrows threaded in one of the worst manscaping and feminized manners or crimes out there in the shopping mall. And
but you're not implying they worked for Obama. You're not implying these people worked for the Obama administration, are you?
Well, on the other side, Michael, I see a woman with a double stroller that was so big it needed its own emission sticker, okay? She has the
I thought you were going to say a double-wide trailer behind there. But,
oh, yeah.
So what you're saying is the cultural meltdown, right? That's what it's about?
Michael, it is a complete cultural toxicity that is enveloping us, our children. And I decided this summer, everybody, you've said this, and I listen to your show and I scream laughing because you do radio in a way that, it speaks to me, right? And you do it with humor and substance. But you're finding what I'm finding, right? This whole debt ceiling negotiations, the topic is so brittle and it's so out of the,
yes.
the realm of how
right.
individuals can affect it that we've got to really look at ourselves and look at our families. What can we do today to affect the culture? We've got to laugh through this pain because it's ugly out there. It is.
You're not suggesting in order to get through Timothy Geithner and the gobbler McConnell, I should go out and get baggy pants and get my ears pierced, are you?
Yeah, well, I think really if you really want to.
Well, what if we conservatives started to look like them? What would happen then?
Well, here's the deal. Here's what I'm finding. Even among mothers, and again, I took my political hat off for this book, and I really tried to look at this as just someone who's, I'm concerned about my children. I'm concerned about.
Please leave it at the hat, Laura. This is a family show. Let's stop at the hat, please.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, exactly. Well, if you're on the Today Show's summer concert series, and you happen to be Enrique Iglesias, whose number one song, of course, was "I Want to Blank You." He's going to be performing on Friday.
Oh God. Hey, Laura, tell the audience about your three children because I think this is amazing. Can I tell you, I'm amazed at your dedication to your kids. I mean, can you talk about it for a minute?
Sure. 3 years ago, well, this actually started about 5 years ago. I was just finishing up my cancer treatment, not to drop the cancer card, but this is just putting it in context. And I say this as just an afterthought. I was getting through this cancer treatment, and, I was thinking, I don't know, I feel called to be a mom. I had this has, the personal life part of it with, finding a husband. That hasn't worked out yet. But, I'm called to this. I prayed about it. And I went down several roads. They didn't work out. The adoptions fell through and so forth. Didn't happen. And then in Guatemala, this little girl was basically found by this agency I was working with, and she was in a little orphanage in Guatemala City. And it's weird, Michael. I saw her picture, and I said, "Oh my gosh! I mean, that's my daughter." And it just started from there. And then the next year, I adopted a little boy, Dimitri, from Moscow region. And then about a month ago, I adopted another little boy, Nikolai, who is now 14 months old, and I call him the Russian Bam Bam because he clears tables like a.
So you have three children. You're raising them alone. You're a single mom. You're a conservative, and you're terrified as to the culture in which they're being raised. Really, that's what your book is all about, of The I Zing, right?
Precisely. And basically, this is a cultural intervention. I'm trying to basically shake us, wake us up, grab us by the lapels, it's not okay to be complacent about this stuff. It's not okay to check out on subjects like, all the kids are going to do it. So if she wants to get a belly button ring, that's fine. I mean, everybody has a tramp stamp, a tattoo. It's just it's a way to self-actualize, to express themselves.
Yeah, what about that tramp stamp tattoo business? You know, I mean, I'm not into it myself, but not everybody who has a tattoo is a psycho lib.
No, that's true. I'm talking about kids, though. I'm talking about kind of the message that so much of reality television and the celebrity-drenched culture that we live in sends to especially young
women. But what are you going to do, Laura? I raised children. They're mature adults. They've done fine. The question is, I mean, we came through fire and hell and brimstone because of the liberal education system. We had to fight constantly. The societal pressures. What are you going to do if your daughter got – how old is your daughter?
She's six.
What are you going to do if she comes home with your book of the I Zing in 10 years and says, rubbish, Mom, I don't believe a word of it, and she has a nose ring, green hair, and she's wearing a size zero pants?
Come on.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. You know what I do. We should be drinking a glass of wine in Florida rather than doing this.
Yeah, Bordeaux right now together. No, Michael, first of all, it won't happen with my daughter. And I know that sounds cocky. And it might sound really arrogant, but I've raised my daughter from the moment that I brought her into the United States. I've raised her to be a girl who respects herself, who demands excellence. And I know she's only six, but she knows, you know, that God put her on this earth for a very special reason. And I talk to her about these issues all the time. And as she gets older, I'll have age-appropriate conversations with her. And she'll fall.
Laura, you adopted a child from Guatemala and two from Russia, right? Why Russia? Понимаешь по-русски?
Oh, давайте говорите по-русски. Без акцента.
How did you learn to speak Russian so well? Are you really a KGB agent? I don't know it.
My brothers always thought so. Well, look, in the 80s, you know, everyone thought, you know, the commies were coming. And I always liked languages. So in my junior high, believe it or not, public high school in Connecticut, they taught Russian. So I started taking it, and I'm half Polish, so there was some Slavic thing going on there.
I just can't believe how well you speak it. I remember you were out visiting your brother, really, and we had a lunch in a little Japanese takeout place, remember?
Yeah.
And then at a table behind us, there were two real KGB-like looking guys. And I said, Laura, they're spies. They're following us. And remember you spoke to them in Russian?
Oh, my God. I do remember. I forgot about that.
And I said, where the heck did you learn to speak Russian so well? I got to tell you, I don't have a facility with languages. I have a reasonable capacity with other things. I'm really good at certain things. I'm not really good at languages. I think it has to be born in you to be able to speak languages so well. And you speak Russian like a native, don't you?
Well, I speak it okay. It's not as great as it used to be. But I lived there as a student in college,
Come on. So you're really a spy. I figured so. Laura, come on. I'm pulling your leg. So let me ask you something. It's a tough process to get a child, to adopt a child out of Russia, isn't it?
It's very tough, difficult. It's really hard in the United States, especially for single people. And
yeah, tell me about United States. Laura, the book is of the I Zing, and it's a very important book, and I'm not trying to get away from it, but I believe the human interest angle with regard to your life and your children and what the book's about is important in having people understand why you wrote it and all of that. What would the process be like for a person to adopt here in America? Is that difficult?
It is hard. I mean, you have to go through like a home study and a background check and all of that, and then you people write letters for you, and then you go through INS and you go through Homeland Security, and then you make, you know, in the case of Russia, a couple of trips, three trips to get the child. And
here in America, could you adopt a child in America? Are there any kids here where are the kids who need parents here?
Yeah, I actually didn't write about this in the book, this part of it, but someday I will, and sort of out of respect for my kids now, I don't really want to go into it too much, but I did go down that path, and unfortunately it didn't work out, and so I worked on that for, almost a year, and unfortunately that didn't work out.
Are there a lot of children in America who need adoption?
Well, I think the message to, all too often is, abortion. I mean, abort, don't adopt. I mean, they both start with a letter A.
You know, Laura, I've tried to donate money to orphanages. There are none. Where'd they go? Where did the orphanages go in America?
Well, what's happened, and look, again, what we've created around us, and it's part of my underlying message here. When, again, with humor And
I think the orphanages are in the malls. I think that's where they're living. They're all supported by the government.
Yes, back to the shopping mall and why I wrote this book. Michael, we are, our children, in many ways, are orphans today. They're being raised by a polluted, pornified culture that wants to turn them into little prostitutes from the very beginning and raise them into self-indulgent.
Where did you get that word prostitute?
What's that?
Where'd you come up with the word prostitute?
I don't think it was mine. I think, to be perfectly frank, I don't remember, but it stayed in my conscience.
Oh, it's so good. I mean, that's good, Laura.
Yeah, but
that's a good line. Of the I Zing, preventing your child from becoming a prostitute ought to be the subtitle.
Yeah, it's basically from the very beginning, Michael, where we indulge our children. I mean, remember when birthday parties when you were a kid? Maybe it was a sheet cake, and maybe it was some store brand vanilla ice cream and a paper pin the tail on a donkey. Maybe some.
Yes, I did. I love pin.
Remember those?
I like bobbing for apples myself, and pin the tail on a donkey.
Yeah,
that's how innocent
that,
I am.
Simple stuff. Now my daughter has been invited, and you know, look, I'm probably never going to have her invited to anything again after this book, but she's invited to parties, right? And she comes back. That girl has a better pedicure, manicure than I've had for several months. I mean, there are spa parties, farm parties where they truck in, the petting zoos. There's circus
You're kidding.
Parties. I mean, it is. We are raising
unbelievable.
Kids.
No, that's really decadent.
We're raising these kids.
No, that's horrible. I remember. I mean, I wouldn't go for it. I got to tell you, I want to make this not personal, but
yeah.
I made a decision many years ago at the wedding of one of my children. I didn't have a lot of money at the time. I made a decision to have a modest wedding and give the rest of the money in a gift so they could have the first dollars towards a house. Yet I know people who borrowed money to put on a grotesque event, and then they wound up with nothing at the end. I mean, it's all show, isn't it?
By the way, Michael, in my relations slips chapter, I have a whole section on my own experience with wedding planners during my brief engagement 5 years ago. These wedding planners come in. These wedding planners come into your home, right, with portfolios. They act like they're Architectural Digest award winners. Okay, and I said to this woman, "What are you carrying with you? I just want to talk about invitations." She said, "I said, are you an architect?" She said, "Well, in a manner of speaking, I'm an architect of dreams."
Oh, isn't that nice? Sounds like she works for the Obama HHS department.
Right.
Okay. We are speaking with a woman who cannot believe that there are only three shots of vanilla in a caramel macchiato. Oh. And in an act of patriotic intervention, she has written a book entitled Of The I Zing. If you have a question or comment, you got a few minutes right here on the Savage Nation. Laura Ingram of The I Zing. I'll be right back.
Savage.
And now, live from the Savage Nation, it's Michael Savage. Welcome back to the program. So, Laura Ingram's on with her new book of The I Zing. It's her first day, and she's a friend of mine, so naturally I have her on. Because, A, she's a friend of mine, and B, her book is important. And C, I want to take a quick caller who has something important to say. Fred, Chicago, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hey, Mike, this is a shout-out to Laura. I saw you on the Today Show this morning, and you did a beautiful job. You totally ate Matt Lauer's lunch. It was beautiful to see. I was thrilled. And all I want to say is God bless you. You're an inspiration. And go, go, go.
God, I wish you were talking about me. I'm jealous, Laura. You ate up Matt Lauer's lunch today?
Yeah, well, I was on the Today Show in the morning. And
What was in the bag? Meatloaf?
We talked about the cultural decay at the Today Show summer
conference. Oh, one of the progenitors of the cultural decay. I know, no wonder Matt Lauer got uptight. So how did you deal with him?
Well, I pulled out a cigarette, Mike, first of all, and I said, what would you do if I lit this up? But my point being, obviously, we've made a collective judgment in the media that smoking is bad for kids, yet the Today Show doesn't think twice of featuring Rihanna singing S&M, singing Sticks and Stones May Break My Bones, and whips and chains will slay me, or something like that. So, you know, they have no problem pushing that garbage on kids who are home during the summer, on summer vacation, but light up a cigarette and suddenly you're a war criminal. So I kind of threw that out there. I hope I'm invited back.
Oh, I kind of doubt it.
Yeah. My video's on lauraingram.com. Hey, Michael, I'm hoping all the Savage Nation folks, all the listeners to Savage Nation in the New York area, come to the book review Thursday night, 7 p.m. in Huntington, Long Island. I wish you were here to come with me. But I want.
Well, what do you mean? I mean, the book review is a book. It's a bookstore.
Yeah, it's called the Book Review. It's one of the great independent bookstores left in the United States. It's in Huntington, Long Island, and it's 7 p.m. on Thursday. And I want the Savage Nation.
Oh, they're going to flood to see you because you're better looking than me. If I was there, nobody would show up.
No, we would hold court for the entire evening. No one would leave.
You know, I don't do book tours, Laura. It's a funny thing. I've got my novel coming out, Abuse of Power. You better have me on your show in September.
Hello.
But Laura, listen. I don't do book tours. You're very lucky that you do. The reason I don't is a multiplicity of factors. I don't know how you do it. Don't they exhaust you?
Yeah, it's tiring, but, you know, what can you do? I mean,
who watches your children? Who watches your children? Do you take them with you on the book tour?
Wait, do I have to have someone watching my children?
Oh, great line, Laura.
Oh.
No, so you have a nanny, right? You have a nanny.
Michael, this is of the I Zing. You've got to understand. Of course I have a babysitter for my child. You know, I'm trying to be in tune with all these mothers out there. Kesha and Lady Gaga are their babysitters. They're just parked in front of MTV all day long.
Okay, right? Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeedy. So are you going to adopt any more children?
Okay, don't turn me into the adoption octomom, okay? Well, Brad
I'm not knocking you. I'm impressed. I'm knocked out by it. You ask anybody. When Beowulf said to me, you know, Laura wants to be on the show. I said, of course she could be on the show. Ask him what he said. You know, I'm pretty straight up. A, she's a friend of mine. You know what I also said, Laura? I said she's a single mom and she's raising children. She's a conservative. God bless her. Absolutely want her on the show. I don't, you know, honest to God, Laura, I really respect a woman who is doing this on her own.
Well, thank you. And it means an enormous amount to me. Your friend.
I mean, you live in Washington. No wonder you can't find a guy. How could you ever find a straight up guy in Washington, D.C.?
Well, Michael, if you read a certain page of my book, you will find out a lot about my dating life, because that's all in the relationships chapter, including when I...
Oh, you mean there's a little disclosure there? What about all the men who are dreaming about you? Come on. You're a good-looking lady, you're conservative, you're successful, and you're looking for a man, Laura? You actually admit it?
No, I talk about various things that have happened, including running into my old beau at the hair salon. He was all in tinfoil in his head, bent over the shampoo.
What? Are you serious? This is true?
It was a gift from God. I kicked him in the foot, and I said, oh, look what the cat dragged into the girly salon. He looked like he'd seen a ghost.
This guy you almost married?
This was a boyfriend, that I dated seriously, but I wasn't aware.
Wow, you missed the howitzer shell with that one.
No, know what the worst, though, Mike, is on a Friday night when you get a text message, you know, it's like 7 p.m., you get a text message as a single woman, and a guy that you're kind of dating texts you and says, hey, any plans this weekend? What are you up to? And I'll text back, nothing with you.
You mean on a Friday? You mean today that's the dating ritual? They wait for the last minute?
Make a plan, Stan. But we don't live with each other. We don't have human-to-human contact. We have.
Wow. Even when I was a kid in high school, you couldn't get away with that. Nobody would go out with you at the last minute.
Right. So this is all what we deal with in the culture today. This is, you know, the sexting.
Well, no wonder you wrote of the I Zing. Any last words for the Savage audience on your new book, Laura?
I want you all to turn out in huge numbers, okay? I'm going to convince Michael to show up at one of these stops if it's the last. If I have to fly you on a private jet to one of my stops, Michael, I'm going
to
do
that. No, thank you. I don't need anyone to do that for me. But if you're in San Francisco, I may secretly show up in a raincoat with clothing underneath it. Believe me.
You have to be in a Lady Gaga egg and just be hatched that night, because then you would really...
No. I eat eggs, but I don't wear them. Laura Ingram, good luck with the I Zing. I hope to God it goes to the top of the charts right here on the Savage Nation. You just heard Laura Ingram of The I Zing. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here are the top headlines on the Associated Propaganda website. McConnell says give Obama new powers on debt limit. You hear this? New powers for Ein Fuhrer. Afghan leader's half-brother gunned down in South. Obama honors troop who fought in Afghanistan. Astronauts make last spacewalk of NASA shuttle era. Obama killed NASA. But what do you care? U.S. Rep. Ron Paul of Texas to retire from Congress. Creator of Brady Bunch, Gilligan's Island, dies. You hear? That's like the most important story to the Associated Press. Now let's look at a real website, michaelsavage.com, and see what made it up to my picture site. Four-alarm fire ravages Manhattan synagogue. Who's torching the synagogues? Who's torching the synagogues? Also on michaelsavage.com, bodyguard kills Afghan president's brother. Find out more about the UK's ban on Michael Savage. You know anything about it? All the stories are in one box. Mr. President, do the math. $250,000 per year is not rich. Feds won't touch our Kansas terrorism case. They're treating him like a common American criminal, even though he's a Muslim convert. That's nonsense. What's not nonsense is identity theft. Someone stealing your credit cards and try to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485. You get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-562-5485. Write it down. Call now 1-800-LOCK-485. X-Aid says Jackson Lee mocked her disability. Marxist president wants to tax the taxes. Tabloid reporters may have tapped phones of 9/11 victims. Well, that we heard yesterday. What else is on my website that's new? I better go to the bottom. Here, Hitler ordered sex dolls to keep soldiers from prostitutes. They did have blonde plastic hair. They look like half the girls in L.A. Prison chaplain busted for paying inmate for sex acts. Catholic priest works at a Queens prison. Paid an inmate $150 for oral sex. I mean, honestly, Beowulf, it doesn't get any lower than that. You think the Ground Zero Mosque is bad? What about Catholic priest molesters? You know what I mean? What else is in the news? Well, let's keep searching and tell the people what's in the news because they need to know. Debt talks break down. Boehner and McConnell blast Obama and saying the real solution is not possible as long as Obama is president. No kidding. Obama threatens to hold up Social Security checks. That's to get the oldsters away from the gambling casinos long enough to hate Republicans. Timothy Geithner demands a deal this week. The most transparent administration in history won't reveal the details of the debt meeting. Murdoch struggles to keep alive his bid to buy up a big channel in England. Big New York Dem hits Obama over Israel. That's to be expected. Suspected U.S. drones kill 38 in Pakistan. It's about time. Gordon Brown, former chairman of Prime Minister of UK, charges the paper owned by Murdoch used known criminals in hack attack. He must be talking about himself. The CEO of General Electric, a wholly owned subsidiary of the Obama administration, is lecturing business owners saying, stop complaining about government. Thanks, Jeff. With businessmen like you, we don't need Ein Fuhrer. Trade gap surges to three-year high. Another fan nearly falls from stands during home run derby. Put your hat on backwards, moron putts. Now you know why we have Obama as president. They get excited about a ball in a field. You hear this? I got excited about a baseball. I still have it from 1952 from Yankee Stadium. I was 10 years old. These men are 50 years old jumping for a ball with a pair of straps. Forget about it. Yeah, what else is in the news? I mean, more? You want to hear more? Cops, a woman drugged her husband, tied him to the bed and cut off his penis and threw it in the disposal. Oh, come on. I didn't make that up. Yeah. I don't believe this. What city was this in? Warning, graphic. Oh, my God. I can't even find the city. Los Angeles? A woman was in custody Tuesday for allegedly poisoning her estranged husband, cutting off his penis with a 10-inch kitchen knife, and throwing it in the garbage disposal. Oh, God. Catherine Q. Becker was booked for aggravated mayhem, false imprisonment, assault with a deadly weapon. Is that with the garbage disposal or the knife? Administering a drug with intent to commit a felony, poisoning, and spousal abuse. Surprised she hasn't been given a job on MSNBC. The woman who was later identified as the suspect called 911 to report a medical emergency about 10 p.m. Oh, God. The suspect called 911 and told responding officers that he deserved it. They found the man tied to a bed and bleeding from the groin area. He told officers the woman had given him a drug in the dinner she had made for him. Oh, I don't want to read you the rest of these details. The 51-year-old ex-man was hospitalized at UC Irvine Medical Center in Orange. Pieces of the penis were taken to the hospital from the garbage disposal, but it remained unclear whether surgeons were able to reattach it. I mean, you can call this story garbage in, garbage out. Anyway, an investigation indicated the two are married and going through a divorce. I guess this could be a cultural defense. These people are definitely, it's a cultural problem. Maybe they do this in the home country. Don't laugh at this. Do not laugh at this. This goes on regularly in this country. Okay, 1-800-449-8255. More of the real serious stuff and the inane right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Play some rock and roll for me. Soon the show will be over. I'm the great. And we've played this too much already. It's overused. Kill it. Break the record. Obama clip. Okay, play the Hispanic Caucus Obama clip. Let's hear it.
Long before America was even an idea, this land of plenty was home to many peoples. To British and French, to Dutch and Spanish, to Mexican. To countless Indian tribes.
All right, so you see he speaks loudly, boldly, and clearly when he's in front of an ethnic pressure group or a lobby group, such as the whatever it was he was speaking to. But when he's asked to make a comment on Ahmadinejad coming here saying it was an inside job, 9/11, he gives sort of a dispassionate, disconnected, a little, you know, aside type of thing. And that is why he's unpopular. That's exactly why. So I think I made my point from my point of view, you know. Do we have better rock and roll for me right now? That I like. I like that. 56 Chevy. AM radio only, no Blaupunkt. Remember the days of... That's so sweet. What a sweet song. You know what I know? Well, let me just... Like pizza in Delray. Pizza Paul is everywhere. You know, the more I think about witness protection operations, I would say the U.S. government has more pizza parlors in South Florida. Then, is that the number one business that the U.S. government is actually in? How much of the stimulus money went for witness protection pizza parlors across America? Turn it off. You know, no, I say it in good faith, in good jest, because you drive around South Florida in the summer when it's like a funeral parlor, it's dead. And there's like mall, one blackened out mall after another with black glass. Everyone's out of business. And there's Italian restaurants. They're thriving. They're always open. Lights are always on. They're on till midnight. Everywhere you go from like Delray Beach down to Fort Lauderdale, it's one pizzeria or Italian restaurant after another. You can find every cuisine of Italy in that region. And no one's in there, but it's fully operational. Does witness protection actually pay for the business and keep it going if there is no business? I wondered about that. It was triggered with the Calzone fight the other day on the guy who jumped over the counter when he thought the guy's insulted his Calzone, and he was arrested for having a gun. He was like hiding as an assassin. Like, sorry, mister, but you see, you're in witness protection. You're not allowed to have a gun for that. And B, you can't pistol whip a customer because he didn't like your calzone. So you're going back to jail. No, but let's say the government sets you up in witness protection, let's say with a yogurt business in Marin County. Let's say they give you a yogurt shop. You're in for like multiple murders, but you're out after a certain number of years. You turned on your. Do they run the business for you? I mean, they give you a profit, a payment, meaning if you're not making a profit. I'm wondering, how many businesses is witness protection in? I'd like to know what the bill is for that, for these pizzerias, and how good is the pizza in them to begin with? That's all I care about. Is the pizza any good? Is what I really like to know. I don't eat calzones. There's too much cheese in them. They're proportionate. Can I talk about food for 30 seconds or less? So I go to North Beach to a different restaurant. Now I'm going now off the beaten track. Now I go to a little place that I used to go years ago. I don't want to talk to anybody. This guy's nice. He's a big Sicilian guy. He leaves you alone. Very respectful. Not witness protection, by the way. And the food is amazing. He has varieties of pasta I've never seen in my life. So I go in there. He knows right away. Gives me the Heineken. I don't even ask. No, not fine wine. I don't want the dining experience. Just give me a bottle of beer. They're really, honest to God, I'm not playing ordinary Joe to you. I drank wine for years, and I can drink the $1,000 bottle as good as you can. But you know what? At the end of the day, I'd rather have a beer than anything else. So he says to me, Mike, you want the Heineken? Yes, so the Heineken and the pot and the salad. It is such a pleasant experience to go to San Francisco and sit in these restaurants and look out the window and see people streaming by. You know what I mean? Like the old, the young, the tourists, the locals, the dogs, the children, while I'm eating. So I said to a friend of mine, Jack, who I was with the other night, I said, Jack, you travel a lot to Europe. He said, it's identical to what it is in so many cities in Europe. And that's the thing that has always attracted me and brings me back to San Francisco. San Francisco is not Mayor Annie Tussum Newsom. San Francisco is not Nancy Pelosi. San Francisco is not simply these whack jobs that you hear all the time. There's an entire other San Francisco that I actually live in when I'm there. And I have a place over there, you know what I'm saying? This is a great week. It's like a night like tonight where the bay is a certain color right now. It's flat and calm. It's a light blue, like a light blue when it gets like this, when there's a full moon and it's hot. Like, I'll go out on the boat this weekend. I'll go out under the Golden Gate. I'll go out about, I don't know, maybe before we get to the ocean itself. It might be as flat as a lake, and I'll shut the engines off in my 40-ton boat, and we'll just drift for a while. No sound except the sound of the water and the birds. That's a beautiful thing to do. Oh, did I tell you what happened? You won't believe this one. I hadn't been on my boat in a month because I was away. I came back, and I'm this done, that done, the whack. I finally said, let's go out before the show. So I go out in the morning. I go out to another area the other way. I go to the North Bay, where it's normally calm, and I see a series of, it's like a tidal current underneath the water. Everyone knows about tides, even if you're not a boater. You know that there's four of them a day, two highs and two lows. By the way, that's what the human being is. I don't know how many different times I have to tell you. You're not sick. You're not neurotic. You don't need medication. If you have mood swings, it's because you're alive. If you don't have mood swings, then you're an idiot. The tides have two highs and two lows a day. Why should you be any different? People have gotten such distorted view of themselves. They think they're supposed to be happy all the time. So the drug companies sell them on pills or therapy. You're not supposed to be happy 24 hours a day. Two times a day you're supposed to be up, and two times a day you're supposed to be down, like the tide itself. You know, you get up, maybe you don't feel good. Good. You'll feel better later. After a cup of coffee and you get out to work, notice your mood's up, just like the tide. And then it goes down in the afternoon. You're burned out, you're tired, you're exhausted, you're bored. So your mood goes down like the tide. Then at night, you go out for a drink, you feel good again. You come home, you feel good again. You see your wife and you feel bad again. I'm joking. That's an old, maybe she feels bad when you come home. But anyway, the point is, so I go out in the water yesterday on the bay. Just a quick run. I want a 1 hour ride. So I go to a very calm area and I see like under the surface of the water, like a choppy, 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 choppy. So I look at it, I said, what is this? It looked like kelp, but it wasn't. It was a tidal current. I've seen tidal currents before, and I figure it wouldn't affect me. It's a 40-ton vessel. So I drive right through it. I swear as God is my witness, for the first time in my boating life, which is 30 years now, the boat almost got spun around. I went into a whirlpool. And instinctually, like a good pilot or a boater, I immediately ran, put my hand on the correct throttle and corrected against it and kept the boat from being spun in a circle. It was amazing. I can't imagine what would have happened to a guy in like a little, you know, 15, 20 foot fishing, like a rowboat. I don't even, it would have been like turned around and around like in a toilet bowl. I couldn't believe it. And so you have to understand that an ocean or a bay has many things going on at once. It's not just the tides. It's not just the wind. There's also currents underneath the water. Now, why am I telling you this? To boast about the fact I have a boat? I'm telling this to you for a reason. Because you can draw a bigger conclusion from it. Life is very much like boating. You know, you think you're on a calm, flat surface, but beneath the surface, there are tides that are moving inside you. And sometimes you have to be prepared. An unexpected tidal current can sweep over your emotions when you least expect it. And you get older, you learn how to deal with it, whatever it may be. I mean, you know, I don't need to make a joke about it. But there's a lot to be learned from that in a humble manner, a very simple, humble manner. I hope I didn't bore you with that distraction. I call it China Blue. Now I remember. The San Francisco Bay tonight, when it's flat and calm like this, I call it China Blue, if there really is such a color. It's a really light, light blue. So if you're driving over the an area like from Sausalito coming over the Golden Gate Bridge, and sometimes it can hit you, your breath gets swept away. It's a flat, calm China blue. And then you look at the San Francisco city lit up with the lights just at dusk, and you see like a whole kaleidoscope of possibilities open up before your eyes. And I call those Fellini nights. It's like a night of Cabiria in San Francisco. And I can guarantee you I won't be there. So don't go looking for me. A friend of mine said he has a restaurant. He said the other day, 12 guys came in from Australia. They said they hoped that to meet Michael Savage. Of course, I hadn't been there for a long time. Not for that particular reason. I said, how'd they find me from Australia? He said, they listened to you on the internet. Isn't that amazing? The reach of radio. Same with television, really.
Savage.
You know, the whole nation is talking about debt, deficit, taxes, extending the debt ceiling. In other words, borrowing more, taxing the rich, meaning everyone except bums on welfare. And, you know, the morality of taking people's money really is emerging as a prominent question. And in tune with this conversation is Arthur Brooks, president of the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research. His book is The Battle, How the Fight Between Free Enterprise and Big Government Will Shape America's Future. Arthur Brooks, welcome to the Savage Nation. Well, with all the talk about raising the debt ceiling and addressing national debt, how do you look at this?
Well, the debt ceiling conversation is symptomatic of a broader set of problems, which is that the United States and the United States government simply can't live within its means. You know, this is the thing that's been alarming Americans more than anything else. We can talk about whether or not it's $14.3 trillion in massive debt, or the limits on massive debt, or $17 trillion, doesn't matter. There's tons of zeros. The real problem is we are spending too much money. We're spending more than we actually bring in. This is humiliating and absurd to Americans, because Americans understand that as the richest country in the history of the world, it's just not right that we're living this way. They want the government to spend less money.
Well, this is the same story every year. With every president and every Congress, nothing seems to change.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's absolutely right that nothing appears to change. As a matter of fact, if you look at the data, it's incredibly alarming. It makes it look like we're just losing the fight. So, for example, if you go back to 1913, total government spending, state, local, and federal, all together was 8%. By 1940, after the New Deal, it was 15%. By 1980, when Ronald Reagan came into office saying we needed to cut government, it was 30%, but when he left, it was 32%. By 2008, when George W. Bush left, it was 33%, and by 2010, it's 36%, and it's going farther and farther north. The truth of the matter is that it seems that nobody can stop this thing, and we need a new kind of argument if we're going to have any chance.
Well, how do we get to this point?
We got to this point because politicians have gradually, slowly but surely, sold the American public a bill of goods. Politicians have told Americans that they simply can't live without certain kinds of government goods and services. Americans are willing to accept those little abridgments to the free enterprise system one after the other. The problem is what they all add up to. What they all add up to is a country that we don't really recognize, a level of government that represents a European-style social democracy. The way that you get to the down the road to serfdom in America is not with an authoritarian government or some sort of thug during the night knocking on your door. It's with smooth-talking politicians who give you one little compromise after another. Do we need a new community center downtown? Sure, that's nice. Should we be good to old people and give them free drugs? Well, sure. Who doesn't like old people? And before you know it, you've transformed your country from a free enterprise nation to a statist society.
So what is the moral argument against raising taxes?
Against raising taxes, the moral argument is that it's not right when you have a spending problem to solve it by raising revenues. You know, if I go into a company as a CEO and is having a terrible problem of costs that are way too high and spending too much money, the stupidest thing that I can do is say, you know what we need? We need a new source of revenue so we can keep spending too much money. That's bad leadership. It's crazy. The thing you're supposed to do when you've got a spending problem, when you've got a cost problem, is to spend less. It's not right to go to taxpayers and say, it's time for you to pay more taxes because we're too weak as a government and too weak as a society to solve the real problem at hand, and that's spending too much money.
In your mind, what would be fair?
The fair thing to do is to remember that we're a society based on rewarding merit, not redistributing resources. We're a society that's based on competition and entrepreneurship, and that means that taking something away from somebody else who's earned it for no other reason than the fact that they have more, that's not fair. That's unfair. We have to remember that a merit-based society is one that rewards hard work, excellence, and innovation, and penalizes free-riding, corruption, stupidity, and laziness. That's what real fairness is. And until we can remember the definition of fairness, we're going to keep losing this fight.
What can we, the people, do?
The one thing that we can do is to absolutely insist that the people that we're voting for do what they said they were going to do. There was a massive wave election in November of 2010. And that wave election, I mean, it had a bigger swing from one party to another than any election since national election since 1938. A lot of those guys and men and women who got elected did so on the basis of saying, government is spending too much money, I'm going to go to Washington, I'm going to fix it. The voters need to pay attention to what they're doing and make sure that their feet are held to the fire. Furthermore, they need to actually bring the same kind of energy to bear in the next election and the election after that and so forth and so on, so that free enterprise advocates from either party, this is not a partisan point at all, are the people who are being rewarded in the voting booth.
Well, where do you think it goes from here?
I see in the near future, obviously, a continued battle over spending as a moral issue in Washington, D.C. I mean, there's a level of combat overspending that I've never seen in my adult lifetime right now. I mean, this whole debt ceiling thing wouldn't have even come up until now. I mean, if you talked about it 5 years ago and said there's going to be a big acrimonious debate about whether the debt ceiling should be raised, people would think you're crazy. But right now, everything that has to do with the government spending your money so it can continue to spend it on things that you don't want has become a profoundly moral issue. What we can expect to see is those fights continuing. If we want to win, if people who think like me and your listeners really want to win this debate, they're going to have to continue to put pressure on policymakers to say, we demand that your voting reflects our values when it comes to economic freedom.
Where can we read more?
Well, I run an organization called the American Enterprise Institute. This is an organization formed in 1938 for three reasons: maximizing liberty, increasing individual opportunity, and defending the free enterprise system. All the work that we do talks about the importance of freedom to the American people in creating an opportunity society. So if listeners go to AEI.org, they're going to find a wealth of hundreds of studies, op-eds, books, everything else that they could possibly want on virtually every topic, from foreign policy to the American economy and to the world economy as well, that gives answers, real solutions that point out the moral case for what we're talking about, that have demolition of the worst public policy ideas, and most importantly, the big new ideas that we can put in their place, the things that we can suggest and even demand from our policymakers.
Dr. Brooks, thanks for joining us on the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much. It's a delight to be with you and an honor.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Let's go on to something more interesting. I want to cover some Hebrew literature in English. Just listen for a minute and tell me if you disagree with this. Rabbi Bendoza said, anyone whose fear of sin comes before his wisdom will endure. But anyone whose wisdom comes before his fear of sin, his wisdom will not endure. Now, I could spend an hour talking about that. I can learn from it myself. It taught me something just now when I read it. So I'll read it again, okay, because you never hear this stuff. Unless you're a very religious person who reads this and hears about it in a formal setting, you will not hear it. Anyone whose fear of sin comes before his wisdom will endure. But anyone whose wisdom comes before his fear of sin, his wisdom will not endure. So now let's play Mayor Bloomberg talking about a mosque and a porno shop in the same breath. Play it.
Whether you like a mosque or don't like a mosque, you don't have to go. There's already another mosque down there within four blocks of the World Trade Center. There's porno places. There's fast food places. I mean, it's a vibrant community. It's New York.
So he is the fool, according to Hebrew scripture itself. Anyone whose fear of sin comes before his wisdom will endure. Obviously, he has no fear of sin. He's Mayor Bloomberg. He fears nothing. But anyone whose wisdom, he has the wisdom with the way of making money, comes before his fear of sin, his wisdom will not endure. So I can tell you right now, at the end of his days, he's going to be seen as a laughingstock. Did you hear what I just said? At the end of his days, and he should live to the age of Moses, he will be seen as a laughingstock who went out on a limb and made himself into the biggest fool of all time. You also look at a thing like this. Pray for the welfare of the government. Pray for the welfare of the government that is taught. For were it not for the fear of it, men would swallow one another alive. That's an interesting statement. That's from a holy book in the Jewish tradition. It's taught in the prayer book. The Jewish people pray for the welfare of the government. For were it not for the fear of it, men would swallow one another alive. Now, would you expect to hear that from Michael Savage? Well, maybe you don't know what to expect from me. That's good. That's very good. Keep listening, because what you're about to hear may help you. Another rabbi wrote, who is wise? He who learns from every person. Did you hear that? Who is wise? He who learns from every person. So I was the kind of young man who wherever I went, I would meet people. They could be a bum. Sometimes I would talk to a bum in the street and I'd learn something. I think I once met either a reincarnation of Moses or God himself on this earth. I told the story only once in my 16 years on the radio. I'll tell it again. It's very simple. I was in North Beach, San Francisco. And there was an old man with a white beard and white hair. Okay, you talk about symbolism and obvious symbolism. And he had a rucksack. He was not really filthy, but he was not dressed like a middle-class person in any way. But he was not disheveled like a bum. And I stopped him, and we got to talk. I looked in his deep, penetrating blue eyes, and I remember I came down to this. I said to him, what is your name? He said, my name is Moshe, which means Moses. So I said to him, do you believe in God? And he turned and looked really searingly into me. And he said, why do you think I created myself? And that was the end of the statement. One statement. Always the simplest answer sometimes cuts right through you. That's the end of the whole thing. Don't tell me about National Geographic with the comets and the proof that you came from a bug and a piece of... Please, don't give me that rubbish. That's a theory. That's scientific theory. And you're talking to a very educated scientist. Please don't count now on a comedian on television to tell you that I don't know what I'm talking about. He does. The genius who went to the High School of Performing Art and smoked dope since he's 4 years old. It's a scientific theory like any other about all of the rest of it. So he said to me, did I create myself? So I gave him a ride. I said, can I drop you off somewhere? I remember I had an old Volkswagen at the time, I think, or a Volvo. I don't know what it was. Yes, he said, I'm going south. So I took him to a freeway underpass. He got off. He got onto the freeway overpass, you know, the on-ramp, and he waved goodbye, and that was the end of it. He disappeared into the night. Now, I never saw him again. What does it mean? Just a stranger in the night. It means nothing. It means nothing. But I learned from him. Who is wise, he who learns from every person. I remember when I was very young, I once met a preacher in the streets of New York in Lower Manhattan, and he was one of these really great street preachers, white guy, a real holy roller. I think he was a Baptist. And I was taken in by this man's incredible voice and his passion. And again, we started to talk. And I said to him, can I give you a ride? That's right. Then I had the Volkswagen, the green Volkswagen. And he said, sure, take me uptown. I'm going to Harlem. I'm going to my church in Harlem. It's an all-black church. And I don't know whether he was the pastor. I don't think so. I think he was a member. I walked into that place, and I saw the Holy Spirit. I saw the Spirit. I felt it the same way I felt it in St. Patrick's Cathedral on Christmas Eve, the same way I have felt it at 777 Eastern Parkway in New York when 5,000 black-clad Jewish men met the Sabbath. I have felt it the same way inside a straw hut in a Fijian village one dark night as we sat around drinking kava kava until the latest time of until all hours of the night, and the men were chanting, and I became one of the men. The men became one with me. I felt it many times. Feel the Holy Spirit. It's there. Maybe this is too preachy for you. I don't really know. But sometimes you got to let it all out. You got to let the genie out of the bottle. After all, people say, how the heck do you do this every day? What motivates you? Why do you get up and do it? I don't have a direct answer for you other than the Spirit must be heard, and then you decide from yourself what the Spirit that you just heard told you. Now, finally, before I conclude this little sanctimonious segment of the radio show today, I want to read you something that is very important because not all religions are equal. I know Mayor Bloomberg thinks that pornography shops are equal to some religions, and doesn't even understand he's insulting the very people he claims to be helping. That shows you the intelligence level of this man who fears nothing because his ego is so vast. I want to read you from the Jewish holy book on a wife of excellence where a woman is glorified. Many of you don't understand that the religious teachings of Jews glorifies the wife. You don't know that because the haters on the left who hate religion would have you believe that the first of the monotheistic religions, which is Judaism, there are others that followed, the first of the monotheistic religions, Judaism, taught to respect the wife and the woman. And so every week the man reads, who can find the wife of excellence? Her value far exceeds that of gems. The heart of her husband trusts in her, for he lacks no gain. She treats him with goodness, never with evil, all the days of her life. She seeks out wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is still night, gives food to her household and sets out the tasks for her maids. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She girds her loins with strength and flexes her arms. And it goes on. She opens her mouth with wisdom and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She watches the conduct of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise and acclaim her, her husband, and he praises her. Many daughters have done worthily, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is naught. A God-fearing woman is the one to be praised. Give her praise for her accomplishments and let her deeds laud her at the gates. Now, compare that to Jersey Shore. Compare that to the skanks whose faces are a total reflection of the Dorian grayness within. The skanks say it all. The face of the skank says it all. Take a look at our society and what it glorifies. The skank, the falling over drunken skank, is held up as a role model. Now compare it to what is taught in the holy books to very religious Jews who read this every day or every week to glorify the wife and the woman. And now compare that to the psychopaths on the left who, when they say, I'm a Jew and I'm a socialist and I'm a lesbian and I'm for the mosque, don't even know what they just said. They haven't any idea what they just said. And these are the people who hate the patriarchy. They hate the very religion that gave them their sustenance. And they hate it. They don't even know what they hate. because their brains were warped at a very young age in the colleges, in the hate literature, the deconstructionist hate literature that said everything religious was bad, and now suddenly they're embracing Islam, which does not respect women at all. Although, maybe I am wrong. Maybe I don't know as much about the religion as Maya Bloomberg does. I have a perception and reality issue that I want to talk with you about. Perception versus reality. Now, what do I mean by that? I have a perception about Barack Hussein Obama that he is a distinct radical, revolutionary, and a Marxist, and I was the first one in the media to point that out. Now, is my perception reality? Or is it simply my biases imposing themselves on my perception and upon the reality of who Obama really is? Okay? So let's analyze it. Why would the man who was the president of the United States continue to appoint people in the middle of the night to major positions? And why would he appoint czars bypassing the Senate? Why would he take over one company after another? Now, I can go down the list. In that regard, I'm using an analysis of the facts rather than my own perceptions and my biases. So in other words, my perceptions are correct. They're not based upon my biases, and therefore Obama is a Marxist radical. Now, the reason I'm saying this is that I know in my own personal life that I often have a confused, distorted view of people who I don't see. In other words, it's very easy to send off a hateful or angry email, and you can start a war with them over nothing. It's the same for relatives who aren't living near you. How many times have you gotten angry at a relative through email or on the phone? They didn't call you, they didn't return a call, and you start to change your picture of them, right? And you demonize them. And then when you see them, it's a different reality and you love them again, whether it's your parents or your children or your aunt or your uncle. It's the same with politicians and the same with talk show hosts. In other words, your perceptions of Michael Savage, what are your perceptions of Michael Savage? And what are they based upon? What are they based upon? Are they based upon your biases? And do they alter your reality of who Michael Savage is? You don't know who I am, and I don't know who you are. What I am saying is a direct meeting of people is the most important thing in a point of view, whether it's on a world stage in order to avert a war. In other words, diplomacy, very important.